Hi, I'm Barbara O'Brien. I'm an animal trainer and photographer, and I'd like to welcome you to The Empathetic Trainer. Hi, I'm Barbara O'Brien, and welcome to The Empathetic Trainer podcast. Today's guest is Kara Wilhelmsen. She is the owner of Creature Comforts Pet Services, where she offers dog training, behavioral classes, and home visits. Kara believes that patience and compassion are important parts in learning to live with our companion animals. Well, I can't disagree with that. And we're really glad to have you here today. Thanks for being our guest.
Thank you for having me.
Okay. Well, when I put out the, I think how we connected was when I first started the podcast, I put out there on Facebook and social media, I was looking for interesting people and that are following that same kind of path that I'm learning more and more about, which is having empathy and compassion and understanding of our yeah. animal, our dogs, our cats, our horses, principally, but all animals. And I'm pretty sure you were kind enough to respond. And so I put you on the list of someone and now we're catching up. So,
yeah, no, it was very intriguing to me as well. Okay. So I love the direction.
So we've been looking over your blog and the other things you're doing. And it's really nice to see you're, you know, obviously quite a bit younger than me and that's great. And it's really nice to see a young person so early start out already having this in hand, like already coming from that approach. Because when I was growing up, the way that we treated animals, well, you know, it wasn't horrible, obviously. I mean, I didn't grow up hurt, but we were taught a different way. And even back then, it was like, they don't even have feelings like that. Quit amorphosizing, quit saying like they have the same feelings as humans.
Yeah.
Which of course, you know, down in our heart, we knew that was ridiculous, but even scientifically now, they've proven that because we're all mammals, which means, or at least not, at least mammals that we're working with, and that means we're animals too. So why wouldn't we experience trauma in a similar way? Why wouldn't we experience happiness? Why wouldn't animals be allowed to have, or, you know, we're not amorphosizing, they are feeling things. And
their brains are very similar.
Right. So that's what I want to talk to you about a little bit. And so we'll get to that. First, I want to start out like, how did you become what you're becoming and what you're doing? And then I want to go into more of the feelings and emotions and the whole empathetic thing that we're trying to do. But how do you get to be you? Because that's pretty cool.
Yeah. Well, it didn't start out with being around a lot of animals as a kid. I actually didn't grow up with my parents having animals. So it must have just been meant to be because I always was obsessed with animals and learning everything I could about them. And it wasn't necessarily just dogs at first. I was interested in horses and cats and everything too. But I just had the opportunity to work at a boarding place. My mom's friend knew someone and
we're talking dog.
Love being around
dog boarding.
Yeah, sorry, dogs. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep, dog boarding. They did some daycare too, but mostly boarding. And I kind of just got into that a lot. And I ended up becoming like a manager type of person there, a crew leader, they called it. So that had helped run the facility and it kept growing. And then they started offering grooming and training. Okay. So tried my hand at grooming. Not for me. I give them lots of props. It's very stressful and hard on your body. But I was a little bit too stressed there because I was always caring about the animals. Being really stressed in that environment, I didn't feel I had enough time to kind of help them, you know, be okay with what was going on and everything. So got into the training. I kind of assisted with some training there for a while in that same sort of facility and fell in love with it. I will say, kind of like you mentioned, back then, I'm trying to think of how many years ago this was now, probably 20-ish years ago, they were doing things that I didn't feel right about in my gut. There were like, you know, prong collars and lots of things. One of the things that I am passionate about is words. Words matter. I have an English degree actually from Winona State University. So I enjoy writing and stuff, but it was very clear to me right away that I didn't gel with everything. And luckily I've always been a person who questions what's going on and why things are the way they are. And I don't just follow because it's the status quo. So I knew that I wanted to do stuff a little bit differently. I didn't want to necessarily even call it obedience.
Yeah.
Because that means, you know, it's like militant, you have to obey. I want to call them cues, not commands.
Oh,
We're cueing you.
yeah.
It's okay if you don't figure it out, those types of things. So I picked up on a lot of, I guess, what I wouldn't do the same there. And so I got interested in finding where else I could learn information from. So while I was in college for English, I went to, it's called Animal Behavior
Oh,
College.
cool.
And it's an online, well, mostly online. It's about, I don't know, maybe three quarters-ish online learning. And funnily enough, I already feel like I knew everything just instinctively, but the best part was actually the in-person mentor program.
Ah.
So yeah, it was great. I got hooked up with I think the biggest, one of the biggest, if not the biggest, places in Rochester, Possibilities Dog Training.
And
The
Rochester,
owner.
Minnesota. Yeah, okay,
Yes,
just
thank
for
you. There's a
context.
New York one I know. The owner was my mentor. So she had already gone through a lot of stuff. So she gave me so much good advice. And then right after my mentorship, she hired me on. So I started assisting with a bunch of classes there. And I did gel with 99.9% of the stuff that they were espousing and explaining to people and how they went about things. So it felt more of a fit. And I just was also loving being around trainers. So other people that had the same ideas and passion as I did. But I was one of the few that was like, I want to do this full time somehow, someday,
Yeah, and that's
instead
not
of
an
it just
easy thing to
being.
do. It's not.
No, most of them are doing it kind of like an evening. I'll do classes here and there in addition to their full-time job. So it wasn't even 2015, 10 years ago. It's kind of a new, like full-time position or whatever you want to call it. Career, I guess, that is coming up where you can be a full-time behavior trainer. So back then it was just classes, 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 classes. That's all that people knew. If my dog has issues, go to a class. That'll solve everything, which it doesn't. So knowing all the stuff we know now with science is when I started reading the books my mentor told me to read and going to conferences. I loved hearing about all the behavior scientific background stuff now that we know much more about, as you said, than we have ever. And I felt like I wanted to do more than just classes. So that's when I started getting into learning about specific behaviors like reactivity, fear, aggression, whatever those things. But it also helped that at the time I had a border collie mix who had a lot of her own behavior stuff going on that I didn't really just instinctively know what to do about it. I cared, but I didn't know how to help her.
Well,
So that was
let's
also
talk about
another.
her. And the
Yeah.
issues you faced at the time, and then like how did you learn to
Yeah.
help her regulate or whatever it is that she needed to do? I have
Yeah.
two border collies and a border collie or a collie cross, so I do get
Oh,
the
nice.
I'm a little biased.
The
I love the
herding.
herding dogs. And
Yes.
so
There are a lot of dogs,
yeah,
but
and
yeah.
luckily I live on a farm, so this is the best border collie life
Right.
one could have because there
Yep.
is, I mean, so much run, play, do their job. They're sheep. They're
Yeah.
so mine don't have. I've been lucky, you know what I mean? They have their, but when you don't have an
Yeah.
environment that's perfect for a border collie, sometimes
Yeah.
things can happen. And then also,
Well,
there's a lot of variation in border
yeah.
collies. The drive, things like that. So please tell me about your border collie.
Her name was Tayla, and she was my second dog. My first one was a pug, so he was just chill, bred to be a lap dog. He was very sweet, but all the dogs I've owned so far have had bad past situations, though. And hers was, as a very, very young puppy, she had been attacked by a dog in the first household she was in. So then she, friend of a friend type of situation, fell into my household at the time. And I was still in college, towards the end of college. But so yeah, I was in a rented house, but it's still was like I had to go to school and stuff. So I did what I thought you should do with a puppy, because I never technically owned, especially a very smart puppy that wanted to do things all the time. So she was one of those like, chew on cords, tear up things, like, oh, she got my shoes. Like, I had to learn the hard way with a lot of things because the pug was not the same as a border collie. They're very, very different. But I learned pretty quickly she was smart. But part of being so intelligent is a lot of these intelligent dogs too easily almost make connections, associations with things. So, like for self-preservation, they're being hyper aware of everything, hypervigilant. And she went, okay, dogs are bad, because I was attacked by a dog. We went outside on walks, and then she went, oh, there are people with dogs. So now people are bad because they're associated with that.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And
yeah.
Yeah. And then it was, oh, movement, because border collie, herding breed, movement got her very, of course, going there. So it became just basically anything. So people on bikes, rollerblades, it became cars then because they had wheels and they would move by fast. So basically I felt like I couldn't have her outside of the house.
You must have been overwhelmed. I mean, that's a lot for anyone, you know?
Yeah, especially at that age where I, you know, I didn't have at that point the trainer, you know, support group, I guess, basically that I have now where I can kind of bounce
things
off of
them.
Well,
the average person in that case would be like, this dog's too much. And they would, like, that's it. And they'd rehome her or whatever it is.
Yeah. But of course, being me, I was like, I don't want to give up. I just don't know what to do.
We're lucky dog, you know. But you did say something about how they make it a quick association. Or what did you said something like that, right?
Now,
when you said that, it reminds me of something. With an animal actor trainer, we audition, dogs to be animal actors. So people will bring their dogs to set. And I've got strobes set up. And we'll take a photo, right?
Yeah.
And 95% of the dogs aren't really bothered by the strobes. Now, we take our time introducing the strobe. We don't just throw them out there. We gradually get them close and we make sure they're not being bothered. But the border collies, some Aussies, they go like, the sky is freaking exploding. they're like they are so quick to go, this is not real life. You know, something's wrong.
It's not
but
good.
It's funny that you say, because the vast majority of the dogs that are bothered by the strobes are going to be really highly intelligent, you know, paying attention because they're like really watching their environment. Not to say other breeds, it happens in other breeds too, but more often than not,
we bred them to be
more
like
often
that.
Than not, it's going to be a border collie who says, nope, the sky's exploding. We got to get out of here, you know?
Yes.
And then we don't make them do it. I mean, we just go, okay, we get it. No
sure,
problem. Because
yeah,
it's not like we have to have them do it. I will not stress a dog out with fear. That's not.
No.
So, but.
And I love
no,
that.
No, it's not worth it. Why would you do that? But
no.
So I understand what you're saying when you say, okay, then it grew into this and then it grew into that, you know? So go on. You were, you were like overwhelmed. So then what happened?
So, once I kind of coinciding with getting that mentor, I would bounce things off of her. And then at like every book I read, every conference I went to, I learned more that made me understand her better, as in, okay, this is more of a deep-seated thing. There's nothing that I can do that's just going to be like a band-aid, because that's not going to actually help long-term, which is what a lot of old-school, kind of traditional training was. Let's just make the surface thing stop. So
and what would be their answer to that? Like I was told when I had a German Shepherd who I got when she was 6, 7 months old, so I didn't start her as a puppy, would worry, you know, and they said, well, have her sit. Like have her sit and think about, you know, and give her a treat. It's like, it was like, but we're not solving the dog turned out to be fine, but it wasn't solving the underlying, you know.
I was just talking about this the other day, like sit was the answer to everything back then. It was just have your dog sit and then they can't do anything bad. If they're sitting and staying, that solves everything.
Until it
or
doesn't,
laying down
right?
Too,
until it doesn't.
Right. No, but it really just doesn't. It's just kind of trying to control a situation that they didn't know enough
Did
about.
It bring up the dog's anxiety by being told to sit and stay? Does their anxiety go up?
Of course. It definitely does, because you're taking away options, right? You're saying, okay, you can't show your full body language, which is how they communicate. They can't do the flight part of fight or flight. Like there's just, you're not listening. Basically,
yeah. It's the same thing with
so
horses.
Going, okay.
Same thing with horses or cats.
Yeah.
You know,
like I don't trust this person because they're not listening to me and actually helping me. They're just trying to control me and have me do one very specific thing, but it doesn't help the underlying thing. It's kind of like, you know, putting a band-aid on a bullet wound. Like that's not, that's not going to do much. It's not going to help long-term. Like it's, you got to get to the root of it all, because if you help them feel better, they're going to act different, which is what you're looking to solve, is the actions, but it's the emotion behind why they're acting the way they're acting. If they're afraid of something, they're probably going to bark at it to get it to go away. And a lot of what we think of as aggression is a lot of it's just, they're afraid of something. They're unsure what's going to happen. They don't trust it. They don't like it. They want it to go away. So they act tough and barky loud. And they kind of, you know, they do all those things that look scary to us, But it's supposed to be because they're trying to get the thing to go away. They're trying to tell the dog to not come near them. They're trying to tell the person they don't trust, whatever it is. They're outwardly showing those things. But as people, like, we don't like that. We don't like growls. We're not supposed to, though, instinctively, because that's survival instinct. If a wolf growls at you or a bear, like, you're not supposed to think that's a great thing. It's just you don't want to just have them not vocalize what they're feeling because that doesn't solve the feeling. So don't worry so much about the vocalization, but let's think of why they feel the need to vocalize like that. What are they feeling that we can help? Because if they feel better about the situation or their triggers, they're not going to do those
Right.
things,
So
but it's also good
then
information.
how? Because the horses are the same way. I keep going back to that, but like a horse is pawing, right? And
Yeah.
then the old school thing would
Yeah.
be like, get after him for pawing. You know, like, okay,
Yep.
first of all, why is he pawing? And then if we get to the where he can regulate and not feel the need to paw, it's like the more work you're
Yes.
doing to make him feel better, what you just said, then those
Yep.
problems take care of themselves instead of getting after a particular action, you know? So how,
Yes,
what happened
exactly.
then? So you have her and you taught, you see the problems, then what happened?
Yep. So I learned about like behavior modification because there was a couple of things at the place I was working, Possibilities, where they would help people with those. So I learned a couple key things. One, just to help her learn the skill of relaxation because she didn't know. They don't, I mean, just like us, they're not born just knowing how to relax in all different situations. So I actively worked on her learning the skill of relaxation, which sounds weird because it's kind of the act of doing nothing
Well, it's with
almost, or at least being
self-regulation,
okay.
right? I mean, in a sense, self-regulation. It's like when we teach children, we say to
Basically.
children, it's okay, take a deep breath.
Yes, so you're also this is the key part that I had to learn that helped a lot was I needed to calm down too. So if I saw her triggers, I started getting, triggered. And so she would go, "Oh, mom's worried about something. Where is the thing?" And it just made it worse. So I had to do I tell people all the time, I'm like, "You can inwardly be freaking out. That's normal, but outwardly just take some deep breaths and be calm and calmly talk to them, and that's going to help them feel more secure." Because they're watching us
Right.
and
Does
they're
it help
looking at
the
our body
owner?
language.
Does it help the owner too? Because you can't fool a horse, you
Yeah, it
know?
does
And you can't
eventually.
fool a dog. A
Yeah.
dog
Well,
knows you, what you're feeling, whether you're pretending or not,
for
you know?
sure. Yep. So I say it kind of starts with it's kind of like the fake it till you make it
Okay,
thing,
that makes
but
sense.
but it's also telling them and having them understand what to do, which is my next part, helps them feel more confident in the situation because then they know how to react to their dog doing these things or how to be proactive about having them have that behavior modification happen so that they feel
Okay, so
better.
what is
So
the
having that plan.
what do they do? That's a great
So
thing, but
yeah, so after the relaxation, because you can do that at home and kind of start that going, the other part is the behavior modification where it's basically like classical conditioning to an extent here. So watch the world is the phrase of the, I forget who coined that, but it's basically going, okay, you're going to go to a space where the triggers are, but you're going to have distance enough from the triggers that your dog is still, it's called at or under
Oh yeah,
threshold.
they, yeah.
Because
No,
we all know what over
yeah,
threshold.
I understand what
Yeah,
you're saying.
over threshold's the crazy. At or under threshold, because they can't learn if they're over
No, because
threshold,
the
right?
brain is
So
the
at
executive thinking is
too
completely shut
stressed,
off. Yeah.
it's gone. Yep. So they just care about the trigger at that point. They're just kind of seeing one thing, worrying about one thing. But when they're at or under threshold, they still will take food, which food is going to help with multiple things. One, it does help them kind of turn off almost the kind of fight or flight type of brain, where if you're eating, the body goes, oh, we're in rest and digest. So
Okay.
to a certain extent, the body calms down because you also have to chew and swallow and breathe and all that stuff kind of happens, but it helps the brain that way. There's dopamine, just like with us, eating makes us feel good briefly. So stress eating, all that stuff. But so food helps with that, but also the watch the world is specifically you connecting the food, the feel good, that stuff with their trigger. So for example, if I'm sitting at a lake, we have in Winona, there's a lake and dogs are walking around it. I can sit back in the field. And when a dog, let's just say it's dogs that my dog is barking at or, reactive to, the dog starts showing up and I start treating my dog just for knowing the dog's there in the distance. And the second that dog goes out of sight, I stop feeding. So it's every time one comes, you get that connection going. So it's not just sight necessarily, I tell people too. It's like if they know it's there, because you know, like dog can be looking at something and look away and be looking at you, but they know that's still going on. Their ear might still be kind of twitched back there, or they might be kind of glancing because they're keeping an eye on it. But it's just knowing the trigger is present, getting that very distinct connection of you get this stuff to make you feel better and connect that with the trigger, which also does double duty of having them go, oh, I'll look to you in case you have something good when I see the trigger coming. So I'm not forcing them, by the way, to look away, because that is a thing that used to happen a lot where they're like, just have them look at you and sit and ignore the trigger. But that also just isn't a natural thing, right? Like if you're worried about something, you're going to want to look at it. And I'm okay with my dog looking at things. That's normal. I look at stuff when they walk, you know, something walks by or a squirrel shoots out up a tree on our walk. I'm going to look at it. But it's how they feel, again, that matters. So I don't care if they're looking at it or not. Now I still worry about, like, if they start to, you know, inch up the threshold a little bit. So they start to get too stary, or, you know, get too tense, and I can tell it's too hard. If it gets too hard, then that just means you need to create more distance. So distance is the variable that we work with Watch the World. So the farther away, the easier they're going to have a time learning and feeling, you know, learning
But
basically, yes, feeling
it's a
okay,
process,
taking
right? It's
food.
not overnight. This is going to take time. I mean, with, you
No.
know, it takes time
Yep.
to reset, you know, build safety,
It's like habit making, breaking. Yeah, it's definitely, you basically you're building up a neurological pathway. You're trying to have them go down this pathway when they see their triggers instead of this old
Okay.
one that they've been
Are
doing, which is
people,
feeling a
are you
specific way.
finding people more open to wanting to take the time to do this versus I'm just gonna get rid of the dog? You know what I mean? Like, 'cause it feels to me like back in the day
Oh,
it was
right.
just, you
Yeah.
know, and there's still, of course, a lot of poor dogs that are dumped and, you know, I mean, they just never get a chance.
Yeah.
But are people, is there a trend to people wanting to be better owners? Did you see that?
I do think so. I think that unfortunately sometimes it stems from trying everything else first. So then I, or people like myself that do behavior this kind of way with a science-based knowledge, kind of are their last resort because they've fallen for these quick fix guarantees of people who aren't actually certified trainers, that are trying to just do the band-aid thing or use something to basically control the dog or make them afraid of even reacting. So a lot of times they've come from that. So then I actually have to do a little bit of,
Backtracking,
you
yeah.
know, rebuilding and shaping and having the dog trust them again and all that stuff. But I will say more and more, it does seem like people are actively looking for the kind of situation that I offer, which is going at it scientifically, empathetically, like making sure that they're comfortable with what I'm doing to their dog and that they understand what's going on because I teach them
Yeah,
too.
you'd
I
have,
make sure they understand everything, right? Like how to read their dog, because everyone should know that, but they don't necessarily. How to read their dog, how what thresholds are, and how to work on the Watch the World and all that stuff. And I write them a very, very, very detailed email, because writer, and I give them lots and lots of information, and I give them resources, because people just Google stuff now, and it's you're never gonna know what you're gonna find. You're gonna find the opposites and person. You know, A that doesn't know anything. They don't know which one to go with. They're just going to be
Well,
guessing
we find
basically
that with the dogs that
because.
come in, because we're going to see a wide variety of owners that want to, you know, get their dog into showbiz, right? And we see
Yeah.
some dogs that are handled exactly like you're talking about. And these, you know, and it's a joy, right? I mean, these dogs are going to be
Yeah.
fine. And we see other dogs, and they, it might even be a young dog, and it doesn't need a prong collar. It just, it's just, it's, you know, there's just, and I'm like, hey, your dog is really sweet. I just don't, you know, well, why? And they go, well, that's what they told us. It was like whatever school they're going to, it's like that's the default and that's the behavior we're going to do. And if you are, if they're open and you can say, you know, maybe you try this approach instead, you know, we just had that happen recently, you know, and then so she switched schools, and her dog, I'm so grateful, is so much happier for it, is going to be fine, you know, but it was a,
I love
yeah,
that.
but they need to be open to
It's
that,
a
you know,
whole.
so.
Yeah, it's a whole nother way of thinking about things. So I definitely feel like I do a lot of like human psychology when I go to these one-on-ones at people's houses, because I have to read the person too and figure out where they are as far as what they think of even just dogs. Like, are they property? Should they just do everything that you say and not all these types of things to see where they are. And then I start laying a foundation of, well, here's what we know now because of science, because usually if you say that,
yeah, a little credibility,
a lot of people kind of go, oh, okay, yeah, science. And the kind of questioners or naysayers, I can usually pick those out right away. And I also give them, some knowledge of what to look for in the trainer, because even if they don't connect personally with me, I want them to understand what to look for as far as like, are they credible, right? Do they have good, knowledge? Do they continue their education? Because if they're doing the same thing they've done 20 years ago, we know better now. So anyone can call themselves a trainer. Unfortunately, they're working on it, but it's an unregulated.
Yeah, it's the same thing in the horse right world. Now. Yeah, for sure.
Which scares me, because it scares a lot of us trainers, because any Joe Schmo can tell you to just, shock your dog anytime they do something bad.
Yeah, we had that happen too. A gal came in with a nice enough dog or whatever, and she had a shock collar on it, and the dog wanted to say hello to us because it was excited.
Yeah.
And she was shocking it for wanting to be friendly. And I'm like, stop, stop right now.
Yeah.
Do you have, we have a different collar here. We're going to take this off, I said,
because what is she teaching that dog?
Not to be nice, people... because I just couldn't see any issues in that. I get really, I don't know. I want to go there. I just get so upset about that, So I hear you.
Totally.
But I also told her, I said, told her we can't use your dog. If you're going to be, if this is your methods, we can't work with you, know? I don't know where she went with that, but it was like, what are you thinking? Why are you, I think they get told something. They honestly, I don't think they're purposely trying to, I don't think they understand.
No.
That's
the thing. I think you're right. I think a lot of it's naivete. Like they just don't know what they don't know. And they will just listen to someone because if you make it sound good, you can make anything sound good. Like I have had dogs my whole life and I've trained them all with this shock collar and they're all perfect. So if you do this, I promise your dog will be your idea of perfect. And they say that and someone goes, okay, why would they not buy in and trust that, especially with all the, usually they give kind of key phrases or words of like, I guarantee, like they'll be like, it's a little bit kind of too good to be true. And then it is type of situation. But yeah, people just want quick help. Okay. And when they are told that if they do something, it'll help in an instant, they kind of latch onto that without knowing there's an alternative necessarily. And unfortunately, using fear, which usually punishment, it's kind of all based in fear, right? Or intimidation. Yeah. Using that, unfortunately, it does work, right? So like technically what they're looking for to happen tends to happen. The dog feels something negative. So then they stop, they try and not do whatever they need to do to not get that negative feeling. So fear and intimidation work. I mean, look at, there's like our military, like there's definitely fear and intimidation have been used by people forever, even in classrooms back in the day, like fear and intimidation, they work to get very obedient results and black and white, but they don't take into account feelings, emotions, and how dogs learn, how any kind of relationship with your dog is usually broken when you start to do that. And that's one of the things I say to people is I do want your dog to like trust you and like you and not be afraid of you. Like, don't you want your dog to like you? And then you can kind of see them going, oh yeah, I guess it wouldn't feel good if I got zapped every time. Like, they have to really kind of get into the mind of the dog and again, be empathetic and understand that that's not actually going to help long-term. So it only works short-term. And when I say works, it just looks like it's helping because the dog might shut down because they don't want to feel that. Right. So it's like an outside again thing versus working on the inside. So if I see a trainer that just says, I do this for every single dog, I always use punishment for every single dog, I always do shock collars, whatever. They're just not knowing enough about each individual dog, first of all, because it's not just a black and white world, not one size fits all. And then also they're just feeding on the basic, idea of fear can work and intimidation can work to get someone or something to do what I want them to do. But it doesn't have anything to do with how dogs can learn without having to use.
Well, yeah, if you're trying to learn something and somebody hits you every time you make a mistake, I mean, how are you going to learn? You're not going to learn your times tables that way. Four times four, whack.
No.
You're gonna be like, oh, yeah, you're not going to learn. And of course, mammals, animals, same way. So then what happened with I'm sorry, the sweet dog's name, the border collie?
Tayla.
So Tayla. You got Tayla. Yep. You you understood. So then how did Taylor herself get helped? What were you able to do for her?
I did just that. I worked on relaxation. There's something called the relaxation protocol that Dr. Karen Overall created that I worked on, where I just, she was on a mat and I held her, learned that I can walk around her. Noises can happen. Things can happen. Kind of like the herding breed thing where I wanted her to be used to things happening mm-hmm. around her and not worrying about it. So I did that. She would get calm treats for things happening around her. And she just practiced that in our house. And then outside of the house, I did the watch mm-hmm. the world. So I would go to places where I knew that there would be dogs and yeah. people, of course, yeah. too. But I would go at times specifically when it wasn't super busy, because that would have just been setting us up mm-hmm. to fail. So less going on, but I could have a clear sight line of them coming and going. So it wasn't just constant.
Right, right.
You know, so there's
yeah.
triggers. Yeah. So there's little gaps in between. And I would only do it for maybe 5 or 10 minutes. And then we go home and take a break and rest. And I do think that I don't know why I did that specifically, because I wasn't necessarily told that. But I have learned since then, it's a very key thing is to not just overdo it with our dogs, not to just go, 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 drill, drill, drill until they have to tell us they're mm-hmm. done by kind of having a meltdown. Or
oh, yeah. No, I understand that completely, because we work on set. You know, we train yeah. animal actors, right?
Yeah.
And that's it stresses. You know, so just being in yeah. the studio, stress. Okay. Now you're on a bunch yes. of new people, stress. And now you're on set. Yeah. Now, luckily, because I've worked with these dogs, I've met them, I know which dogs absolutely love it. You know, like this is yeah. like a cheese treat day, and like they get excited yeah. driving. And so, because we don't use dogs that don't love it, because A, it's not right. And then B, they don't look good on, right. good. They're looking,
you can tell.
Same thing with a cat. You know,
yeah.
I mean, the cats like to do the studio work, because you're not going to make a cat do anything. I mean, there's no obedience
no.
to a cat. So, you know, they have, yeah. and same thing with those other animals I work with. So I will tell, I'm on set and I'll just go, dog's done, or we need a break. And then yeah. like, because yep. they, you know, if the photographer, who 99% of the time, of course, they're good and they know it, you know, they're doing it. But if they miss it in the time frame, you know, because they're not ready, I'm yeah. sorry, dog is done, because I want him to come back
yep.
next time and be just as happy.
And want to, yeah, exactly. You don't want to kind of taint it.
Right. No, no. And so we do it. I'm watching him yeah. before he starts telling me he's done. I'm watching him beforehand yes. because, you know, you might have a 5 minute window to get your shot, but, you know, sorry, dude, you know, you weren't yeah. ready. That's on you, you know? I mean, we're yep, really lucky yep. because the people we work with are so intuitive and so great. But I've also feel like I've trained them too.
Yeah.
You know, like I've trained
the people seriously.
to understand the limitations of that it's a dog. My favorite yes. thing to do.
Yep.
My favorite thing to do is they'll give you a complex set. We want him to walk onto set, pick up the toy, shake it, turn around, lay down, and then look at camera. And I always look at him and I go, I'll tell him, because. Like, you know, yeah, like it's a human. He's going to, you know, one thing at a time.
Yeah.
One action.
Yep. You have to break it, you know, all down.
But yep. it's just so funny, because I always have to go, I'll tell him and we'll see what happens, because, you know.
Yeah. I always joke that they don't know our language. They aren't verbal species like us, where they are like, they know English and all this stuff. Like they 99% of what they do is body language. Mm-hmm. And so if you're not listening, it means you're not looking for it. Like you gotta actually try with them. Like they just are, we're kind of their world. Like they really quickly learn mm-hmm. us. They learn what we look like, what we sound like, what we do when certain things happen. They can learn to read our faces so well. There's some cool studies there where they can, especially their people with facial expressions and everything like that. But yeah, they're brilliant at that stuff, because it's kind of, we're their world in a certain way, right? Like a lot of stuff revolves around mm-hmm. us. But yeah, it's amazing how many people don't even know some basic body language, like, you know, communication that dogs are trying to say something. Like I will look at a dog and go, okay, your dog is really unhappy right now. And someone will have no clue.
Right.
And it's not that they don't care. It's that they just don't.
Or they'll
know.
Go like, I don't know.
And so that's,
I don't know what happened. He just all of a sudden bit that person.
Yeah. There's basically no such thing. Usually there's several warning signs that they just aren't aware of before something happens. So I have to kind of get to the nitty gritty of the timeline of things yeah. and, hey, do you remember what their body looked like when you did this?
Yeah,
or
there
whatever.
Was a famous horse trainer who said, yeah. what happened before what happened?
Yep, totally. Mm-hmm. It didn't just come out of the blue. Something usually triggers something. And sometimes it's just a troubleshooting, problem-solving game where I'm like, okay, is it because this dog, you know, physically doesn't feel well and the kid, you know, pushed whatever it physically could be, that could be part of it too. It doesn't have to just be mental. Mm-hmm. it can be the dog's getting older and has arthritis. Mm-hmm. And so it doesn't want to do something. You know, I had a trainer friend whose dog wasn't grabbing things anymore and holding them in their mouth. And she ended up learning that the dog had a fractured tooth.
Oh yeah. It hurt. It would make sense. Yeah.
Right. But like, you wouldn't know otherwise because the dog was still eating. But yeah, it was just one of those things where if something is different, there's some reason. We got to just get to the bottom of the reason. And yeah, they're always talking. That's why I tell people, I'm like, they're constantly saying things. You just got to learn how to read it.
But do you find that that energy plays a big part in this, like our energy around them?
Yes. It really does. There are definitely people where I can tell that they're just so frustrated with their dog that it's hard because you can see the dog and them both kind of at odds just in the room right away. I can tell that there's not a good relationship. Because if you are constantly stressed, just like if a dog's constantly stressed, and you have all these stacking stressors and not enough time to regulate, you know, you're on a hairpin trigger. Like you're not going to be able to handle things that you maybe even could have handled before. Like, I'll see someone get really frustrated about some teeny little thing. And I'm like, okay, there's something else going on. You've had a hard time for a while now, and you need some help learning that some things are natural and that we can do a couple things that'll help you guys and to rebuild that trust back up, because it is a relationship. It's not just a one way, you know, thing. Mm-hmm. And having people learn that they're also not, most of the time, I'll say, you know, you're not doing anything wrong. You just don't know what to do. And that's why I'm here, and it's okay. Mm-hmm. You know, we're going to have you learn these things. And even just getting someone who's understanding like that does tend to help the people almost immediately. I will have people that will sometimes cry or hug me and be like, I feel so much better. Mm-hmm. It's not me. I'm not ruining my dog, you mm-hmm. know, and all that stuff. And they're like, I just want to have a good relationship with my dog. And I'm like, I know, everyone wants to have a harmonious household. Like, that's
right.
That should be a normal thing. But yeah, it's definitely just, there's a lot of just not enough knowledge on dogs in general. And that's why education for me is such a big thing. And I'm kind of more and more in my career, I'm kind of zooming mm-hmm. out and wanting to figure out places that I can, you know, give that knowledge and have education in just basic dog stuff, like body language, communication, how to interact with a strange dog, you know, all these kids and dogs. I mean, there's a lot of things that if just more people knew, it would really, really help. And if we had people understand to get that information from.
Right.
Behavior, you know, certified trainers, behaviorists, not just their neighbor, their mm-hmm. friend, their groomer, their breeder, their vet. Which, that being said, vets are great to ask for a lot of advice, but they're not technically just behaviorists. And I've worked at several vets, mm-hmm. by the way.
Yeah, of course.
I love doing that. It's a very stressful environment as mm-hmm. well. Very draining emotionally. But they are like, yeah, we don't really get, you have to basically specialize it in it. And I was like, I know, which is why you guys probably feel bad when you get asked for advice and you just kind of have to guess on the spot to try and help them if you don't have a trainer, you know. But having worked at two vets, they both now recommend people to me because they're like, oh, at least I can give them somebody who knows what they're doing, who is a behaviorist. But I get why people kind of naturally gravitate towards asking maybe the vet if they think of, you know, someone who might know, mm-hmm. you know, the science behind behavior or something like that. But it definitely is one of those things where the more we get, you know, vets to work with trainers or even breeders to recommend a trainer instead of just giving behavior advice. Sorry, my clock. I don't know if you're gonna be able to hear that, but it plays a song every hour. Okay. But yeah, it's definitely something that collaboration is helpful, and not just, you know, the ego needs to go away too. There's definitely some of that where, you know, if you work with dogs, that doesn't mean you know everything about dogs. I'm not, even though I groomed for like 6 months, I'm not going to give grooming advice. Mm-hmm. I'm going to send someone to the groomer. You know, I'm not going to, you know, just pretend I know things or just try and help because, you know, you don't know what else to do. I want everyone to kind of collaborate in mm-hmm. a way, or at least know where to go. At least just go, here's a great resource. Here's someone who, and again, to do that, they need to know what to even look
for. Well, right. Because I don't know if you remember, a few years ago, there was a very popular television show with a fellow that was using methods that we just kind of find abhorrent, you know, but you'd have to know that because a lot, it was very popular, you know?
It's the charm. Yeah, and it's like, it makes it sound good.
So yeah. And
they want to believe
it. I don't know how much, you know, yeah. So you know what I'm talking about. And
I know exactly what you're talking about. It gets me very upset too. Yeah. It's a lot.
I'm really glad that the world has changed in the sense that there's so much information out there. But like you said, it's a matter of finding the right information. And we've been really lucky on the podcast to have people who are advocating advocating for better treatment and understanding of animals. That's pretty much our focus. Yes. And so you've been fantastic because you're totally exactly expressing what I believe and I want more people to hear. So let's talk about that because you mentioned that's what your future goals are. Because first of all, let's talk about what you're doing right now so that we'll be adding all of your links and information to the show notes so that people can reach you. But what you're doing right now, but I was also interested in what you had mentioned for your future, which sounds pretty exciting and helpful for all the dogs out there. I mean, it's a good thing.
Yeah, no, it's definitely, currently I've gotten to the point instead of focusing on kind of dog care or any of that stuff, I am, like I said, really honed in on the training, but I think of it as just behavior and training because they kind of are a little bit different things. And I tell people when I say behavior, that's more of an all-encompassing thing, whereas training, that's just teaching dogs skills usually, right? Like it's kind of, but I want to focus more on the behavior stuff because I want to help people as much as I possibly can, but doing it with just one person at a time, while that is fulfilling, I don't feel like I'm doing enough for what I can. Like my knowledge that I have, I want to just be able to give to as many people as I possibly can. So that's why I'm looking at the industries within it, right? That people that touch dogs, so vets, groomers, and all that stuff, but also recently shelters and rescues. I just spoke at one of them, like an internal, they had all their dog people, volunteers come, and I spoke about dog body language. And I left that feeling like I did so much good because there's like 30 people that asked a bunch of great questions. Yeah. And I knew that them handling dogs all the time, especially strange, you know,
and
new
stressed.
Dogs,
the dogs
coming
are
in
stressed.
Constantly. Yeah. Exactly. And so it just felt like I touched more, you know, lives that will then touch dogs' lives. And that really ignited a flame in me. And I kind of had a feeling from the beginning, like, I kind of just want to speak, lecture, help the people understand the dogs. I will still always love working with dogs, but I to be able to have more of a, you know, affect more change in this world, I need to touch more
a bigger
people.
Platform, as it were, a bigger platform.
Well, a bigger yes, platform. Yes. Yeah. Yep. So I do want to branch into doing that. I do think, I don't know if this is necessarily where I will go in the future, but I have thought about having, finding a way to have vets have, you know, maybe one behaviorist or trainer kind of on call or on staff
to brilliant.
Send people to, because it's such a big part of what they, I mean, again, I've worked at vets. I was always the one who had to hold the dogs because I instinctively knew how to help the dog calm down and hold them, but not feel like I'm holding them so that they could relax while things were happening. And I would say, oh, they're over it. They need a break. Mm-hmm. You know, there's someone that knows those things to train the vet techs who do most of the holding of dogs, or anyone that would touch a dog. Again, groomers. I mean, even though I don't have the grooming skills, I would know how to handle a dog better because I would be reading them constantly and I would be okay taking breaks when they're specifically needed. Yeah. And I would work everything around the dog.
Dog centric, you know, emotions. It's much more dog centric. Yeah.
Yes. Yes. So, I mean, long term, it'd be great if I could even just start facilities that kind of had multiple different things where I was training trainers to know behavior and then also having them get connected with within different industries to kind of be the go-to to help other people learn. Yeah. So kind of teaching people to teach.
Yeah.
People.
Oh, I think that's a brilliant idea. I hope, I think dogs would be better off for it. I think it's a brilliant idea to combine resources in one place for people. You know, like if it's a beautiful boarding facility or doggy daycare or whatever, you know, and they have like, and they're doing things right. Okay. But to have that added part of like, hey, if you're having specific issues, you know, here's our on-call person, or here's the seminar you can go to, or here's, you know, or the big, you know, the shelters, like you say, or, you know, it's probably difficult to monetize. So I hope for the best for you, but
I know, but, that's always the thing with training, isn't it? It's always like, okay, how can I do what I love, but also, you know, make a living.
Yeah. And then
it?
It's only fair. I mean, I get that, our podcast is not monetized. It's a labor of love because I just want to get this message out. Yeah. But if somebody came along and said, hey, we'd like to create something bigger out of this, I'd be like, sure, that a bigger
right?
platform so we can get the message out. You know, and then make a little living. Yes. Awesome. But, you know, so I get it. I get it, what you're saying. But I know that your heart's certainly in the right place for the dogs, and helping the people will help the dogs. So That's
exactly. Yep.
All right. Well, we're to the part of the show where I sent some questions to you, they're questions that we borrowed from a book called Tim Ferriss's. Tim Ferriss, and I'm blanking out on the name of the book because I haven't said it out loud. So, Tribe of Mentors. Thank you. Anyway, I wanted to give credit because we totally, borrowed this idea, this Tribe of Mentors questions. And it's also what we call, let's see if I can hold this up, snack break. These are some caramel nice. Cherry scones. That's what they are. Yeah, scones, because I got to feed my crew and we're done because it's food's part of it. We're also food motivated, just like the dogs. So,
yeah, exactly.
So it's
right?
the question time.
You get to live.
Okay. So what is the worst advice given your profession or bad idea that you hear of in your field of expertise?
I guess an all-encompassing one is quick results. To try and get everything done as quick as possible, because 9 times out of 10, and maybe even 10 times out of 10, if you're just going for quick results to get things taken care of, you're going to probably go for harsher methods because you're not actually taking time to learn about the animal
right.
and figure out a way to help them that's going to not just be good for you, but for them, which should be the goal. The quick fixes are, that's not the goal. The goal should be, quality mm-hmm. of the information that you're getting and how to learn about helping your dog in a way that's empathetic, I guess.
I love
it. Word for it to make sure that. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Okay. What inspires and motivates you to do what you do? And what is your true purpose in the world?
Mm. Yeah, honestly, I can remember thinking this from being just a little girl. I always felt like I had to be a voice for animals because they don't have a voice in the way that we think of it, like speaking, right? They can't stand up for themselves in the mm-hmm. way that we're used to even seeing from people. And I always wanted to be like a voice for the
That's
animals.
Great.
So kind of speaking through them, going, okay, this is what your dog is feeling. How can we help them with the feeling? So it's not just, it's being a voice for them, but also in the way that I'm helping people understand that voice too, if that makes sense. So connecting them to people more with them and their voices.
Oh, absolutely. No, that makes perfect sense. What quality do you admire most in people?
I definitely, empathy and passion. I've always, compassion and empathy are words that have ruled my whole life because they're very easy not to have, I feel like. It's more of like, I really am happily surprised when I see people I connect well with because they have the same type of empathy. I feel mm-hmm. like empathy rules my world. I feel like if I got one, personality trait, it's empathy. Like that, that is who I am. So I feel like having other people that I find ever that have mm-hmm. it, I always will connect with them, whether they're empathetic about, passionate about certain mm-hmm. other, things. It's the empathy where you can put yourself in others' shoes when you care about the well-being of others, even if it doesn't affect you. That is something that I really cherish and think is super important for everybody.
I wish there was more. I have to agree.
I do. I know.
Okay.
Yep.
What have you become better at saying no to?
Mm-hmm. Lots of things. One, it's just kind of in general standing up for my energy. Mm-hmm. I guess when I say that, I mean, I don't let myself burn out as much as I used to because I could be working constantly. I used to work a lot. I used to do like 20 classes a week and then I'd do stuff on top mm-hmm. of that. And while it's good, I always, would burn out in the end anyway. So it's like, well, I can't help people if I'm burned
right,
out.
Right.
So I have to learn to say no to certain things that are going to take too much energy, which is why I landed in this part of the field, because I was getting burned out in veterinary care. I was getting burned out, grooming burned out really mm-hmm. fast. And even in boarding and daycare, it's just a lot of physical. And I would see all these animals and their emotions and not be able to do something about it. So protecting my energy and my emotional uh-huh. well-being has been a huge thing. So that might mean saying no to having too much of my time taken up. It might mean saying no to, physically interacting with people for a day, because mm-hmm. I sometimes just need to I have like an autoimmune disease and other things going on with myself that I just need to listen to more than I used to. So luckily the right people understand. So if I need to say no to something, I have a support system now that understands. And a lot of my clients, the good ones, understand everything too. I mean, you know, when they're on the same level as you, if you can't understand that I'm human and sometimes need to say no, then we might not be able to, you know, work together well anyway. So I need to be okay with people maybe not understanding me, but I just need to listen to myself and protect my energy.
Okay. All right. The other question was, if you could send a message to the world, what would it be?
I feel like I need to be super poetic here, but in general, the idea is I want people to understand that what they do and how they act affects others, including animals and dogs. So thinking about what you're doing before you're doing it and understanding that what you're doing is going to affect something else or someone else. So like you have ripple effects, like one negative thing can affect someone's whole day. And then they might be a little bit more, you know, grumpy towards someone else. And it just kind of negativity can spread. And it goes with animals, like I said, too, where, you know, I just like to pause and have people just think about, okay, well, what I'm doing isn't just going into the void. Others around me are being affected. So it's just self-awareness. Self-awareness is huge. And it really does help with being empathetic. It's like you kind of need to actively work on that. To be able to understand. And again, it goes with dogs too. If you're understanding how what you're doing affects them, it makes a difference.
For sure.
So.
For sure. No, that's a good message. All right. So then how do we get it? If somebody wants to learn more about what you're doing, how do we find you? I mean, we'll have these links, but let's have you share everything you'd like to about all that.
Sure. Yeah. I have a website. It's www.ccpsmn.com. And it has kind of a long bio on myself, and it has all my services on there, my blog, which I need to post more on there. So look forward to that coming soon. I'm getting there. And then I also now on there, you will see have virtual classes.
Oh, I was going to ask you about that because that, you know, hopefully the more people that can see this can, you know, work with you virtually, which would be great. So.
Yeah, because I want to be able to help people that aren't just in my radius physically. I mean, I would like to help people around the world if possible. So virtual learning is obviously more common now than when we had certain things in the world happen. So I want to be able to connect with as many people as possible and answer as many questions or, you know, help people with their specific dogs, whatever it might be. Even just having like lectures there where it's like, if you all you care about is one topic, there's an hour, you know, that you can go on and learn about that. That's something that's somewhat new, but I'm hoping it picks up a little bit and takes off because, like you said, that's just connecting more people.
Right.
Like I just want to be able to do that. And a lot of people, if they're sitting at home, just pop on. It's like a podcast. You can just pop on and watch something or listen to something for a little bit of time.
You know, have several subscriptions to horse trainers because they're putting out information that is where I'm learning over and over again, you know, how to be better with my horses. And it's so inexpensive. I mean, when you have a model that you subscribe, it's like, you know, so inexpensive for tons of information that's so useful. And then you can usually find a community of like-minded people who are following the same thing. And then you can talk about it more. And
That was what I was thinking of doing too. Like I'm in the works of having like a Patreon, which will have a community on there. And I'm going to have like PDFs that you'll have access to and things like that. And videos and topics you can do, you know, question and answers or people.
Oh yeah.
Can,
no,
you know,
it's limitless. Pool, like, and I think that the need is out there. And, you know, cause I live like 70 miles from a city center, you know, a big major city from like, I'm out in the country and to a dog training school to physically take my dog would be 30, 40 miles one way, you know, you know, so.
And that might not even be what you need. You might need one.
Right. Exactly. So being able to, you know, learn things remotely is also a great way besides, you know, the in-person stuff. I'm glad that you're in the world for our dogs and for helping the people with
Thank
their
you.
Dogs. And we
you too.
Really
yes.
appreciate you coming on our podcast today. And like I said, everyone, we'll have all of her information, Kara's information on the website. And I bet there's a book in there somewhere. You probably got a book, you know, you're going to be working on. And yeah,
it's in the works.
Just as well.
Using that writing degree.
There you go. So thank you so much for coming on. We really appreciate it.